Good morning. Today is Tuesday, October the 6th, and it is 8:51 a.m. Yeah, it's 8:51. I waited. Oh, shoot. I wonder if I can stop it. I just realized. I waited till it was daylight out. I had a couple of chores to do, and I wanted to actually take a picture that wasn't black with a couple of white spots in it. I got an alarm. It's going to go off at 9 o'clock. If I can shut it off. There we go. It won't interrupt the recording. So, yeah, I wanted to take a picture this morning that didn't have just black with a couple of white spots. So I waited until I got back from taking the kid to school. And as a result, I'm running a little bit late because I had to stop for groceries on the way home again. At any rate. Here I am, hiking along. I've got chores to do when I get home, so I'll probably forget to post this because I'll be busy doing chores. On the launch front, yesterday's selfie with sponge activity seemed to have generated a few extra sales. The rank is still climbing. In Ashes Born is still moving up the charts. It's when I left the house, it was 172, which is the highest this title's ever been. And my highest, I think, is 112. And that was, what was that? That was, I think that was the release of Full Share. Might have been Double Share. Might have been Double Share. But 112 is my highest rank ever. So if this beats 112, this will be my highest rank ever. If it goes into the top 100, that would be unexpected, to say the very least. Unexpected. Much of the movement seems to be from Kindle Unlimited. The sales are nowhere near, actually, to be honest. And the sales are nowhere near where I expected they would need to be sub 200. But the page views are quite large. Total since the beginning of the month, since the book was released, is six figures. It's like 130,000 page reads. So, yeah, that's a lot of pages. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to be worth as much as the sales have been or would be. But the sales have been very good. So I'm pleased. There's a different uptick cooking along, and that's what's going to help propel the book further up the charts and get it more attention. I'm closing in. I finally went past Nick Andy Webb's Constitution, which is a $1.99 title, which is I've been doing very well. He's one of the advertising proponents. And his book has been doing very well with the advertising and price promotion. The other one that's doing really well that just sets my teeth on edge is the 2287 AD or whatever it is with the bikini on the half shell cover. It's a 99 cent, it's a monster book, it's really long. It's only 99 cents. And it showed up in one of my, it was either BookBub or BookGirl, I forget which, showed up in one of them anyway. And I just couldn't, I got through like four pages and was like, seriously? Seriously? Yes, really. I had a hard time. I had a really. No. No, we're not going there. We're not going there. It's... apparently a lot of people have bought it and continue to buy it, or at least read it, and I'm not one of them. So, it's actually falling right at the moment, so I suspect they'll have to prop it up with some more advertising. I haven't seen it advertised yet, but... I wouldn't be surprised to see it show up in one or other of the promo sites. So the share books will be showing up in promo sites the 1st of November. We've got a BookBub advertisement for sometime in November. First, early in November. And I'll be putting the first three books at a serious discount for those people who are catching up, or who by then I suspect will have finished Ashes, but maybe of two minds about whether or not they want to go back and start at the beginning. So there's that. I'm also looking at perhaps doing something with Tanith Fairport near the end of November to see if we can get Tanith some love. Ravenwood has sold an enormous number of books. It sold like 80,000 copies. And I've given away another 11,000. So 80,000 people have that book. But 80,000 people haven't bought either of the other two. So that book is due for a little bit of... If we're gonna go in, we may as well go all in and see what we can do with it. But yeah, yesterday was pretty much Facebook day. The Facebook group has exploded. I know yesterday we were looking at counting down to 350. We've just gone over 300. And we're almost at 400 now, in large part because of the Selfie with Sponge promotion that was happening. People getting a sponge and putting a number on it and taking a selfie with their sponge. A lot of people are just grabbing images from the internet and photoshopping a number on it, and it's okay too. But I really like I like seeing how different people solve the problem of taking a selfie with a sponge. Some people don't like to be in their own photos. So Simon Rushton took a picture of his little dog with a little statement about how the dog needed a bath. So here's the dog with the sponge. So tons of fun in government-inflicted simulation. Oh my god! Excuse me, but I just came around and I started heading east again. And there is this monster black cloud over there. Holy crap! I didn't see that coming. I mean, this morning's photo to the east was pretty so-so just because it was foggy and overcast and nasty, but holy cow, that's ugly. Oh, and sad news, I heard from a friend back home, back in Maine, that the captain of the El Faros from my hometown, back in Windham, Monk Post, and there are three other Mainers who were in the crew. So it was sort of like, wow, small universe. You don't really think too much about it until that sort of connection happens. So it's not anybody that I know. I haven't been back there 25 years, but the fact that he was from my town was sort of like, really? Holy cow. Of course, Stephen King wrote Salem's Lot while he was living in my town, and I was living there too at the time. And nobody, of course, knew who Stephen King was. Not to the degree that he is a household name today. But reading Salem's Lot, I recognize the landscape. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, here we are, hiking along. Sweating. It's actually quite chilly, but I've got on a fleece shirt and a windbreaker, so I'm really quite warm. I need to get home and do up the breakfast dishes, and then settle in and try to get some words on the story. It's the 6th. I still have time at 5K a day, but it would be better if I could get a couple 10K days in. I don't believe it's going to be today. And I'm going to lose 3 days to Mahaikon. Although, if I take my netbook, I might be able to get some word out, some writing in while I'm down there. Particularly early in the morning when there's not a lot going on. Once programming starts, I tend to be a lot more visible. Let's see, we have our tickets for the theater for the Daughter's Play next week. Four nights next week. They're doing something funny with the seating. I'm not sure exactly what. They're doing something different with the seating. And apparently some of the audience is going to be sitting on the stage. And the play is going to take place down in the seats. And leave it to Brian Humphrey to come up with something interesting in terms of staging, but it should be fun. The problem for people who want to attend is that normally there's like 450 seats in the auditorium, and quite frequently, particularly on Friday and Saturday nights, that house is packed. The house is full. So this season, there's only going to be like 125 seats each night. So I've reserved 2 seats per night because I really like to go and see how the play changes from night to night. And I bought season passes, so I can go as many times as I want. So I've got 2 seats. I could take the wife or the other daughter, or the wife and the daughter could go, or some combination of the two of us. Because we've got 2 seats. I didn't want to take up 3 because I don't want. It's going to be a limited number of seats. I wanted to give as many different people an opportunity to see the play as possible. from the boy Brian was talking. He didn't think it was going to be a problem, but I don't know. I've got them. I got my seats. So, Smuggler 1, tentatively titled Milk Run, is... I think I've got a good start. I think I've got the first chapter. It's a little more action-y. It's still not shoot 'em up. Although we've got a wrecked ship already. That's a claim... apparently, we're not sure, but either a claim jumper or the... the advanced team for a group of claim jumpers. We're not exactly sure what the ship was doing in the belt, but clearly it was doing something, and it has been destroyed and left to be discovered, as opposed to destroyed and made to disappear. Now, one of the realities of a life in the deep dark is that getting a ship to disappear is really, really easy. He's just pointed in the direction of the nearest gravity well and give it a little push. And it doesn't take very long for it to leave your vicinity and then eventually disappear down the gravity well. And if it happens to be a sun or a gas giant, disappear forever. There is an opportunity to find a wreck on a rocky planet. But, A, you have to be looking, and it's a little tiny spot to find, particularly on a planet that doesn't have atmosphere or anything else that would attract attention. So, yeah, this is, what was that ship doing there, and why was it destroyed, and who destroyed it, and who might have been on it? So, what I'm trying to do is establish Natalia Ruggieri's character. Zoya is a sidekick. Natalia Ruggieri is really the focus, the point of view that I'm interested in developing. And much like we might see in a Wild West kind of literally a horse opera, we might see rival gangs and claim jumpers in the mining towns and some rough living here and there. So that's sort of the mental model I've got for Toehold Space. And even though some of them don't do a lot of mining anymore, some of them started mining and did other things. Some of them, like Tejas, started out with mining and then created cattle ranches in space because gravity plates, of course, made it possible for them to have grass and cows. Okay, here we are. I'm out of the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.